Okay, thank you. Welcome everyone to this important discussion. I want to first of all also thank Mr. Steinman, of course Rabbi Chaitin, for organizing this and giving me the opportunity to share with you some ideas on parenting. We've called it parenting from teenagers, or raising from teenagers here in Sydney. So the emphasis tonight is, it's a general parenting session, but it's more specifically targeted and focused on instilling a sense of religious observance, excitement, frumkeit, with some specific areas for teenage boys. I want to also thank everyone that's joined, because I'm a firm believer that taking time, just the very fact that a person takes time to pause, reflect on the chinuch, on the education of our children, is already a strategy. And it's an effective strategy. It has always guaranteed results. Just the very fact to pause and just think about the education of our children is something that needs to be done very often. And shkoyach, and thank you so much for those that are doing it tonight. Now, parenting, as we know, is not such an easy thing, especially nowadays, as we'll talk about, and especially teenagers, as we'll talk about soon. But just as introduction, as parents, we know we have the tremendous chus, we have the tremendous merit, gift that Hashem has given us, and the responsibility to do it, which means that despite the challenges, we have to believe, and this is an important foundation to parenting, we have to believe that we have what we call the nesinas koyach. We have the ability, we have the power that Hashem has given us to overcome the challenges that might be there and to be successful as best as we can. Now, we're human beings, we all make mistakes. Really important as a parenting strategy, never to beat yourself up, but just keep trying. Just a quick vort, always nice to start with a little bit of a vort. We know that in Chumash, we have when the story of Yosef and Binyamin and the brothers who sold him and so on, and then eventually, to cut a long story short, the cup is placed in Binyamin's sack and he's taken back to the to the palace, and Vayigash Elov Yehuda. And Yehuda approaches Yosef. And we are told by the commentaries that Yehuda approached Yosef, if need be, to go to war. To go to war, to rescue and to take back Binyamin to his father Yaakov. And the Mefarshim explained to us that Yehuda was very well aware of Yosef's strength. And he was very well aware of that war might be a very tough war, and a war that's perhaps almost impossible to overcome. And yet he went to war. Why did he do it? Vayigash Elov Yehuda. Why did he confront Yosef, if need be, even to fight? One pasuk, one verse that the Torah tells us, Ki avdecha orav es hanar. Because he says to Yosef, your servant guaranteed this boy. I took responsibility for this child. And if I took responsibility for this child, I'm going to do whatever it takes to succeed and bring him back. And I think that's a great formula for us parents. It is difficult sometimes, and it's difficult to the point where we almost think perhaps that's what we can lose. But nevertheless, ki avdoch orav esanar, we have taken responsibility for this boy, we've taken responsibility for this child, and we need to do whatever it takes. Okay, so very quickly, what I want to do is I want to just give three, before we launch into it, I want to give three quick introductions. First one is that tonight the focus is on the home. Now, it's really important to understand, as Rabbi Chaitin said before, the home is such an important part of the education of the child. In fact, I think it's the most important part. So powerful. The home has a tremendous impact, more than we think it does. It's the anchor at the end of the day. It's the anchor where children can reconnect. It's the anchor of every child. School plays a critical role. They are both parts of a child's life. And what's really, really important, that both these players in a child's life, which is the parents and the school, should not and cannot delegate or blame the other one, right? But each one has their role, each one has their responsibility and needs to take their responsibility very seriously, and ultimately to create a partnership, which is really what's happening tonight. That's a really good start. Second of all, very important, I always say this when I do parenting stuff, obviously not everything I'm going to say tonight applies to all children, applies to all teenagers. Each one is different. In 1 hour, and particularly in one night with a big crowd, all we can do is offer some general rules, general principles, and you need to take what is relevant and think about it and apply it to the best of your ability. Thirdly, a few weeks ago, I gave a two-part series called Torah Parenting for Little Children, for parents with small children, because obviously young children are the foundation. I would recommend people listen to it, because The recording is available. Many of the principles that we don't have time to go into tonight are really relevant even to teenagers as well. But I want to just point out one thing, that although it's so important to get it right with small children, but parents of teenagers should never ever think that because we made some mistakes, maybe it's lost case. You know, maybe if I'm having trouble with my teenager, that's it, I've missed the boat. That's completely not true. We can always repair and rebuild. Hashem always gives us the power. Hashem always gives us the ability to somehow find a way. It might be a little bit different. The strategy might be a bit different. Our expectations might change a little bit, but we should never ever give up, because we always can be parents, and we always are parents, and we can always make it happen. Okay, so let's jump in. Now, obviously, I'm going to move a little bit quickly because there's a lot to cover. I'm going to also ask you that if you have questions at any point of tonight, try just put them into the chat, and I'm going to try and look at them towards the end, and we'll try our best to address them if we can tonight. Hopefully, tonight is a start of a conversation, because we can only really touch on general principles. We're going to touch on some specifics tonight, but really, there's so much more to talk about, and hopefully we can continue this at some times. Okay, so let's begin. But first of all, what I'm going to do is let's begin. I see you're up. Mr. Steinman just come on, so I'm going to thank him again, just for giving me the opportunity. So, and great to partner with the school as always. So let's begin by highlighting some of the challenges, generally and specifically with regard to teenage boys, more specifically, and then we'll discuss some of the general principles and then come back to some of these specific challenges. First of all, just generally, we need to understand that the teenage period is a very difficult time for the teenage, right? For the teenager, right? Because despite the brave and sometimes obnoxious front that these kids put up, you need to understand it's actually a time that they go through which is very, very complex and very, very challenging. Teenage years is really a transition from the innocence of childhood to adulthood. And even in Torah, we find this principle. We find that when a boy becomes bar mitzvah, right? I'm talking about boys because this is the focus of tonight's. Maybe we'll do a different time for girls, but this is tonight's focus. Many of the principles are the same, obviously, but this is the specific focus of tonight. When a boy becomes bar mitzvah in halacha, in Jewish law, they become responsible. They become somewhat of a mature adult, and they're responsible for their actions. And yet, in the same Torah, we find that there are certain things they're not responsible for, and they never become fully responsible until we call Bar Esrim, until they become 20, really. So the whole teenage years is really a transition time. On the one hand, they're no longer children, they're responsible. On the other hand, they're not fully adults either, right? It's a time that their hormones are all over the place with everything that comes with that. It's a time that they are fighting for their independence, and yet still, even though they might not always admit it, they crave the love, the approval, and the dependence on their parents. Right. It's a time where their self-image, their confidence, their social practices, self-esteem, all goes haywire and all is very, very challenged. Right? So it's just, I think, just important to understand that when teenagers suddenly transition from being a child to a teenager and they start in some cases acting bizarre, you need to understand that it's a difficult time for them. It's very, very common, for example, particularly the beginning of teenage years, the beginning of high school, that they suffer even some mental health issues, not an uncommon thing altogether. It's all normal stuff, but it is a very difficult time. Now, of course, not just difficult for the teenagers, difficult for the parents, right? That sudden switch often from a very pleasant and sweet child to a moody, difficult individual can be very difficult. And I think sometimes nowadays, it doesn't start at teenaging, it starts sometimes from 8 or 9 years old for some reason. Everything's ahead these days. So when I say teenage, I'm going the old-fashioned sort of formula of teenage, like, you know, when you get to the teens, 13, 14. But it doesn't always start like that. It starts from much younger nowadays somehow, right? The second thing why it's difficult for us parents is that often, I want to just highlight this because it's an important kind, I'm going to come back to it soon, is that we tend to personalize things. You see, when your five-year-old is obnoxious, you don't take it personally. But when your teenager starts to act out, and the teenager is supposed to be more mature, this teenager is supposed to be some, I mean, one day you can have quite an intelligent conversation with a teenager, and the next day they're acting like a real child and making your life really difficult. As parents, sometimes what we tend to do, we tend to personalize it. And we tend to have a fallout, a faribble, as they say in Yiddish, with our 14-year-old, right? And that's a problem. We shouldn't do that, but it's tempting because we don't understand it. We want to throttle this child. I mean, come on, don't you understand what you're doing, kind of thing? And no, often they actually don't understand that we need to navigate that and really go through that properly. And the third reason, of course, why teenaging can be very difficult for parents is that teenagers, but generally speaking, and those of you who have a couple of teenagers will know this. I'm still in the parenting teenage style. I'm doing my last teenager now. But you know that teenagers are completely unpredictable, right? They're a little bit like the Melbourne weather. Like, I mean, they can be adorable 1 hour, and the next hour within the same day, they can be terrible. They can drive your life crazy, right? So, or like the stock market, you know, crashes one day, it's up the next day. It's just very, very difficult. And we are left sometimes confused. We're not sure ourselves kind of how to handle it. So that's just a general concept, just highlighting the fact that the teenage years are not easy, not for the child and not for parents. Now, parenting today, that's always been the way. But parenting today has become more difficult generally. It's got to do with the permissiveness of society and just the general culture. But today we have some very specific issues, especially when it comes to what we call Torah parenting, especially when it comes to parenting in a way where we're trying to imbue and instill in our children Torah values, Torah observance, and a commitment to a Torah-type lifestyle with Jewish values and Jewish observance in Kiyum HaMitzvahs and so on and so forth. There are very difficult obstacles that stand in the way, particularly when we get to the teenage years. And I think on top of the list, and we're going to come back to this in much more detail, is technology. Right? Let's say the way it is. Right, the unlimited and unfettered access to sometimes very dangerous material and exposure that our kids have today, particularly with the temptation that boys have to stuff that is really bad, is a lot more than ever happened. And it's in a way where they are exposed to something that they know a lot more about than you do, right? A lot more than their father and a lot more than their mother. Now, we need to understand and be very, very clear. This is not a... And if you've come here for this, that's great, because this is not a potential problem. This is a real problem, right? I know this. I know this from talking to parents, from talking to educators, from talking to children and watching them. They are exposed... Kids today in high school are exposed to really terrible stuff. Not just inappropriate. Sometimes it's just hardcore pornography or close to that. Sometimes they're developing a real dependence, and I use dependence like euphemism actually. It's not just a dependence, it's a lot more worse than a dependence sometimes. It's really an addiction to material on the net, gaming. It can be even games which are not so terrible in terms of content, although most of them are, but it's becomes a real addiction to the point, and I've spoken to parents about this, where sometimes kids actually develop a clinical addiction, and a clinical addiction is very, very hard to undo. This addiction sometimes in teenage years is connected to other addictions of substance abuse and alcohol and things like that. These are all very real problems, and they're all very real problems in every community. It is happening to many of your children, right? And we're going to come back to that. It's a very, very big issue, and it's certainly one of the great problems and challenges of parenting teenagers, particularly in a Torah context, as we're talking about tonight. Secondly, there's a general decline, a spiritual decline, we could say, in the world today, right? So we talk about concepts of imbuing spirituality and Torah observance in our children. We need things like what we call Yirat Shamayim. We need kids to be compliant and to have what we call fear of heaven and Kabbalah soil, to want to do things because they need to be done, want to keep Shulchan Aruch. We want children to have a gishmak, a pleasure, sort of a passion for learning Torah, for davening. These things are very hard to instill today because we live in societies where it's not part of the culture. In the shtetl, in terms of all these things were part of the culture, they were in the walls, you pick them off the walls of the homes and the walls of the streets, even in the walls of the shuls. Today it's not that way. The society culture is very much against and very much the opposite of the type of values that we're trying to instill, and it affects things like the passion and the enthusiasm to keep Shabbos properly, especially the enthusiasm to daven properly, to be really immersed in learning sometimes, right? What this also leads to a lot of times is the concept of social pressure, which is so difficult for kids to overcome. It's a temptation which is very, very hard to overcome. Very, very difficult. So these are some of the challenges. Now, I need to highlight that it's not bleak. Kids actually, in essence, are amazing today. And I'm not just saying this, I want to make you feel good. I'm saying this because I've witnessed this. I've seen kids learn. I've seen kids get stuck into learning Gemara and learning Chumash. I've seen the younger kids respond to spirituality, to ruchnis, in the most amazing way, in the most incredible way, sometimes a lot deeper and a lot greater than we were as teenagers. Right. So I think that's just really important to understand, because I think in essence what you need to understand is that the children today, interestingly enough, with all of these spiritual and ruchnistic and technological problems, they actually really, and again, I'm not just saying this because I want to sound balanced, I'm saying this because I've witnessed it, they really actually are craving and searching for ruchnius. They're searching for spirituality. They're searching for meaning. They're searching to do the right thing, because when they do the right thing, they love it. They absolutely love it. If they get involved in something, they're getting involved in a good Gemara lesson, in a good shir, in a good kumzitz, whatever they're getting involved in, they love, absolutely love it. It's just they're distracted with all the stuff that's going around, and it's just us what they need. They're really on the right path. They just need us. They need us as parents. They need our involvement, our guidance, our inspiration to channel all of that in the right direction. Okay. So, what I want to do, having highlighted some of these challenges, I want to first of all share with you some general principles in parenting teenagers, and then come back and apply it to some of the specifics. So to make it easier, because we only have limited time, and I wanted to make it in a way where you can take something away with you and really maybe apply some of what we're going to talk about tonight in a real way. And again, much of what I'm going to say, maybe many of you know, many of you are already doing. It's always good to revise, but we can always do better and we can always strengthen ourselves. So I want to just say, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you a number of thoughts. I'm going to put it into a very simple formula, which is based on a book which I once read by Rabbi Daniel Schonbuch. It's called Teens. It's called At Risk, But Never Beyond Reach, which is a great title anyway, right? So obviously, if you read the book, it's a good book actually. He talks about teens really at risk. At risk probably at greater levels than any of your teens, but all our teens are somewhat on some level at risk, and therefore it's a really, really good principle. But the second part of the topic is also really important, never beyond reach, right? So I'm going to put a lot of what I'm going to say into a formula which he develops in that book, and he talks about, particularly with teenagers, the three C's, right? Just a great way to remember this so you can take it away with you and think about it. Just always like stop and think about, how am I doing with these three C's? And the three C's are the C of connection, the C of control, and the C of communication. Okay, connection, control, communication. So let's go through and unpack each one really properly. So just by way of introduction, you'll see as we go through these things, the combination of all these three is actually difficult, right? Because that's, by the way, that's parenting in general. It actually takes a lot of work to balance, because in parenting, in every relationship, but particularly in parenting, and especially with teenagers, we need a big dose of love and chesed, but at the same time, we need to be firm. And that's a very hard combination. It's a combination that needs a lot of work to put it all together. But I want you to remember a very important principle when it comes to parenting. Parenting is not about us. It's not about what we think is important. It's not about what we feel or the way we like things done. But it's what's right for the child. It's what's right for the child in terms of the values which we inspire and guide them with. Okay, let me get that clear. So as parents, we set the tone of the values, right? And then how those values are implemented is different with every child. Every child is different. Every situation is different. Always needs a lot of thought. And the number one thought that is needed is that we always have to think, what is right for this child in terms of subscribing to those values, not what's right for me, or what I feel is the right thing. What do I feel the way it has to be done, right? Rabbi Twersky has this in one of his parenting books. He says that children are not nachas machines, right? We have a responsibility to bring them up and to educate them and to inspire and guide them in the way of Torah mitzvahs and Torah values. But they're not there to cause us pleasure. We are there to make sure they grow up properly. And that could mean different things for each child. And therefore, parenting, I always say, is very much a part of our own personal growth. We need to learn to do things differently. We need to learn how to respond and not to react when we shouldn't react. We need to learn how to control our conversation. It's a lot of personal growth for the parents that's involved in parenting. And that's a really, really important thing. So let's go through these three C's. The first is the C of connection. In the critical stage of adolescence, what is absolutely crucial, I'm just saying this slowly because I want to really, really emphasize this. What is absolutely crucial is to have a strong relationship with your teenager, more than with a younger child, but to actually develop a strong relationship with your teenager. Now, let me clarify. When I talk about a strong relationship with your teenager, I do not mean becoming your teenager's friend. I don't mean becoming your son's buddy or his mate. That is not the Torah way. It is, in fact, the opposite of the Torah perspective. We're not our children's friends. In Torah, there are very specific different types of relationships, and there are many relationships in Torah which are what I call hierarchical relationships. There's authority, and there's those that have to follow authority. Those that set the rules, and those that follow the rules. And parenting is certain one of them, right? So we know we do not become our children's friend, but we do need to have a strong connection with them. We need to have a strong relationship with our children that, by the way, cannot be delegated to one of the parents. It is important for both parents. I'm talking now specifically to fathers, fathers who are busy, fathers who aren't home a lot, right? Often you need to spend time and you need to develop a strong relationship with your son, mothers also. But both parents need to have a very strong relationship with the son, because fathers specifically become a role model. A strong relationship with children allows you to understand your children, allows the child to look up to you, to have a connection with you. It's a two-way connection. And then we want them to guide them in certain ways. We want them to change. We want to steer them, want to channel them in certain ways. It's a lot easier to reach them. Children can be controlled when they're small, but they cannot be controlled when they're teenagers. Children need to, you need to do it from a context, from a perspective of having a relationship with them. When you have a relationship with a child, it's so much easier to instill those values. It's so much easier to negotiate. It's so much easier to set the rules, as we'll talk about soon. It's so much easier to do whatever you need to do to make amendments, to modify as a parent, to do your job as a parent, to lay down the guidelines as a parent. It's so much easier when it's based on an extremely strong relationship. So let's understand what that means. First of all, let's just talk about a few things that's involved in setting that, in creating that relationship, right? First of all, we need... And at the risk of sounding cliched, we need to love our children unconditionally. But not just to love them unconditionally, we need to express it. And when I say express it, again, if you're just going into teenaging, you need to know that things change. The way you do it with your younger 5-year-old is not the way you do it with your 14-year-old. So expressing love with a 14-year-old is done when they want, how they want, and where they want. Right? So you need to be careful. Children, one of the halachas of teenaging is apparently that they're supposed to be embarrassed of their parents. So you need to understand that you need to understand when they want, but it needs to be expression of love, it needs to be warmth, it needs to be a real expressed, unconditional acceptance and love. Now, this can be very difficult with some teenagers, especially the more difficult ones, because teenagers are very, very unpredictable, as we said before. And one of the ways that we have to have a continuous loving relationship with our teenagers, even though we have to be parents at the same time, requires another skill. And that's the skill that parents really need to learn, and learn quickly with teenagers, and that is the ability to forget and bounce back. I don't mean the child, I mean the parents, right? So let me paint for you a scenario. Some of you might not be familiar with this because maybe you have angels as children, but those who have normal teenagers might know what this looks like, right? So, you know, it can be evening time and you've got a bunch of kids and the little kids are calm and everyone's fine and everyone's getting ready for dinner or going to bed, whatever the case is, and suddenly the teenager makes an appearance, right? Teenagers often make grand entrances, in case you haven't noticed, like grand entrance. Everyone knows. Teenager walks into the house, into the room, everyone knows about it, right? Walks in, is in a bad mood. He trips over his younger brother or younger sister's child, makes him or her cry. Comes in hungry. A boy teenager hungry is very dangerous, right? Kid comes in and starts to scream, "What's for supper? Leftovers? Sunday night? Leftovers? Right? Leftovers for Shabbos? What, you forgot how to cook?" And suddenly flies off the handle to his mother, to his father. Unbelievable chutzpah, changes the whole equilibrium of the room, makes tension. Teenagers can do this, by the way. They can suddenly change the whole atmosphere, right? Storms out. I can't eat the stuff anymore. I'm gonna die of hunger. I don't know what. Just by the way, incidentally, kids don't die of hunger, even if they. It's been scientifically proven, apparently. Kids don't die of hunger even if they miss a meal. So don't worry about it, because you know the Yiddish mama heart all of a sudden melts and goes to the fridge and maybe I can make you something. I can make you pizza. I can make you this. Kids have to eat what's there for supper. It doesn't matter how old they are or how young they are. If they don't want to eat it, they can go to sleep. But anyway, creates a whole kerfuffle and storms out. Poor parent, mother or father, is left like, you know, doesn't know what just happened. He's left really angry, chutzpah of the child, messed up the whole calmness of what just happened at home. And that's it, and that's fine. Next morning, you know, the mother's in the kitchen. Teenager walks in 5 minutes before everyone has to leave to school because it's always late. And walks in as if nothing happened. And a couple of things could happen. So they could walk in and say, "Hi, mommy," or "Hi, tati," or "Daddy." And you think to yourself, "What do you mean, hi, mom? Like, are you nuts? Like, you're not going to apologize? You just were so obnoxious last night, right?" And without condoning the behavior, I'm just giving you an example of a scenario. This can play out in so many different ways, right? But without condoning the behavior, now you don't have to condone the behavior, and you need to deal with the behavior of last night in a different setting. But right now, it's time to go to school. The house is getting ready. It's not a time to bear a grudge or to hold on to what happened last night. This is really important for parents. You also need to make as if nothing happened. Return the smile. If it's right, be loving, be warming. You have to really continue on. Now, if there's behavior to deal with, there's behavior to deal with, right? But you can't hang on to that hurt for a long time because you ruin the relationship. You need to continue the relationship. There might be a quiet moment later on when the kid comes home from school after they've had a snack and calmed down where you can actually pull them aside and say, "Listen, no, I just want to talk. I mean, you know, this what happened last night really something that can't happen and we need to talk about it." Okay, but it can't be carried on into the relationship. We need to learn quickly to get over it just as much they do, forget about it and move the relationship. Keep on deepening the relationship. Go out with them, do things with them as we'll talk about soon, but the relationship always needs to be strong, the love always needs to be there and the acceptance has to be unconditional. I want to just make a very strong point here. And again, I'll say this slowly because it's so critically important. The teenager that makes it the hardest for you to have a good relationship with them is the one that craves that relationship most. Okay, let's say it again a little bit differently. The teenager that makes it really hard for you to love him is the one that needs the love the most. Right? Teenagers don't wake up in the morning. Remember this. No teenager wakes up in the morning with the sole intention of rebelling and making your life a misery. That is not the mission statement of a teenager. Right? Teenagers want to do the right thing. They find it hard. They find it challenging. They're going through a lot of stuff. It doesn't mean you have to put up with it. But it does mean that you have to love them and you have to deepen the relationship. They crave the relationship. They need the relationship. And we need to make it happen. The second part of building a relationship is a very, very simple but very, very important thing which is so lacking in our society in all relationships, but it's spend time. Spend time with them. Now, often I've heard parents tell me, "I want to spend time with them, but they don't want." So true, that's a problem, but you need to spend time with them in ways, look for opportunities, pick up on their cues, right? It's not like a six-year-old where you say, "You know what, at 3:30 in the afternoon, I'm going to play with you a game," and they're so excited, they can't wait, and they have a countdown. But teenagers doesn't work like that. Teenagers, you need to find the right moment. If you ever get hold of this book, he gives 73 examples of things you can do with your teenagers. Like you can work on a hobby with them. You can go to a concert with them. You can learn Torah with them if that works. Doesn't always work. You can go to a museum. You can talk about stuff. You can go open a bank account with them. Whatever, you can go shopping with them, right? You can ask them, I'm going to college. You want to come with me? And they might say no. They might say yes. It might happen. It might not happen. But you need to... Eventually, they'll enjoy spending time with you. So we need to look for ways, many, many, many ways. It could be working on your, I don't know, playing a board game, whatever it might be. But kids need time and kids need the parents to spend time with them as part of building that relationship. Another part of the relationship is to have discussions with them, help them through failure. You know that teenagers often don't do stuff and they rebel against stuff because they fail. They feel like they're failing. They feel they're not doing it well. They feel like there's expectations of them and it's very burdensome. So they just, completely reject anything that they have to do. It's very important to respond to failure and help them through mistakes that they made without judging them, without judgment. But to explain to them how people do fail and it's okay and we all make mistakes and so on and so forth. And another part of building a relationship is praise. Now, praise needs to be very careful with teenagers because they don't always take to it kindly. Praise has to be age appropriate, but it's really important as part of the relationship building and as part of positive parenting to look for things that they do right. often we get so lost in the teenage challenges that we never find the things they do right. We need to every day look at things, and it could be very mature and just very informal. It's not like, you know, a little kid, you go, oh, it's so wonderful, you put a star on your chart. It doesn't work out with teenagers. It's just as simple as, you know, I really appreciated the way you took off the table today. That was really good. And I saw you were reviewing the Gemara, and that's fantastic. I just wanted to say that I noticed that, and that's really good. Or I noticed that, you know, lately you're not on a computer that much. Whatever the case is, look for things. It doesn't have to be lavish praise. It doesn't have to be over the top. It doesn't have to be gushy. Teenagers and teenage boys definitely don't like that very much. But it needs to be clear that you've noticed and you recognize and you acknowledge. So that's the first C, connection. That's the probably the most important one. I mean the most important one in terms of foundation, right? That foundation, you really need to have a strong relationship with your teenager. The second C is the C of control. Now this needs to be carefully gone through. First of all, you need to be in control, right? The number one rule of a parent, including parents of very big husky teenagers, is that don't be scared to parent. Not the mother, not the father, right? You are in charge, and kids have great antennas. They can pick up ambivalence in 1 second. Right, you need to learn the voice of authority. You need to be authoritative. You need to be assertive. Right, when you want something, it's okay. You're allowed to say no, and you need to be a parent. Don't be afraid to be a parent, and don't be afraid to set boundaries. There are limits. As Dr. Pelkowitz always says, love without limits doesn't work. Right? Don't bow to social pressure. You know, all my friends' parents let them do this. All my friends do that. All my friends' parents are much nicer than you, and so on and so forth. Right, all the kids are saying this, obviously, but so don't batter that social pressure. So that's the foundation of control. You need to be in control. You are in charge, right? However, you need to be clever about your control. You need to be clever about your authority. So control as a parent needs to be assertive, but it needs to be in the context of that healthy, warm relationship that we talked about before. Daniel Schoenbuch, in his book, he talks about an interesting thing. He says, it's about shifting from direct control to indirect control, right? And let me give you a kind of example of what this means, right? You have to know that with teenagers, especially as they get older, there comes a time where you don't have a lot of leverage, right? You have control. You are the parent, and if you've built a good relationship and a good understanding, it will work. But at the end of the day, if you clash and you try and impose things, after a while, there's nothing much you could do, right? You can't force anyone. So the assertiveness and the control needs to be much cleverer and much more sort of indirect control and expression of your values more than direct instruction, right? So let me give you a couple of things to think about. Again, we're doing it very, very briefly tonight because it's only 1 hour, but I'm just giving you some foundations to think about, and perhaps a different time we can go into the much more detail. Don't over-legislate, right? First of all, don't over-legislate. If you're going to make rules and you're going to be a parent, pick your battles and don't over-legislate, particularly in things that are irrelevant to a child. I'll give you an example. It is not that necessary for a child's room to be tidy, I promise you, right? As long as it's not unhygienic, as long as the basic garbage is thrown away, it doesn't matter what they're... If they're functioning and they're getting dressed every day and they're doing the stuff they basically need to do, it is not important for children's room to be tidy. It's not a war worth having. I once heard from Renee Miller, as she heard from someone, a really, really great trick, a really great strategy. If you really want your kid's room to be tidy, go in one day, tidy it, take a picture, blow it up, put it on the door, close the door, and every time you walk past the room, it'll be tidy. But otherwise, don't worry about what happens inside, right? So I'm just giving you sort of an example of don't insist on things that are really not important, right? Not important for, if it's things about responsibility or about spirituality, that's important. But if the things that just bother you, that's what I said before, it's not about you. It's not about us as parents, it's about what's good for the child. They'll work it out later, and most of them work it out, or they learn how to tidy later, or they don't, or they remain untidy, it doesn't really matter. Right? Second thing is don't micromanage. What I mean by don't micromanage is as follows. I'll give you an example. So your kid is sitting at a Shabbos table, and he wants to go away, and it's time for him to leave, or any meal for that matter, and you say to him, Baruch, Yanki, you know, you need to bench. Don't forget the bench, right? So, sorry, I forgot. Takes the bench, and like a couple of seconds later, he's finished, right? Don't make a scene, right? You made your points. Important to bench. The value is there. If they absorb the value, if successful, they'll work out proper benching later. Don't make a whole scene. What, you finished benching already? Couldn't be. You couldn't have done it so fast. Even I have been reading a lot faster than you, a lot longer than you. I can't even do it so fast, like I've heard some parents say, right? Don't do that. It's not worth it because you're making it burdensome. Don't make Yiddishkeit particularly, don't make it like a whole burden. Don't make a lachatz, as I say. Don't put pressure. Now, that doesn't mean they can go away with the table without benching. No, be clear. The value is clear. When in this house, when we eat, we bench. And of course, we need to talk about those values and discuss them. But if you didn't bench, I need to remind you, you need to bench. As long as you've taken that bench and you benched, I turn a blind eye and I don't matter what you've done anymore. This goes with davening. Also, we'll talk about davening a little bit later, right? So that's just an example of don't micromanage. Don't go into all the details, exactly how it was done, exactly how it wasn't done. Thirdly, rather than barking a lot of rules that we tend to do as parents a lot of times, and then when they don't work, what we try to do is we avoid the issue altogether, right? So sometimes what we do as parents is like this. We very, very strong about the rules. We lay down the rule. This is what it's got to do. This is the details. This is where it's got to be done. And then somehow it doesn't work. And then we stop doing it altogether. So we stop caring. We can't do that. We are parents. We have to be in charge. But we have to know how to be in charge. So therefore, really, rather than just sort of broadcasting announcements all the time in terms of rules, we have to sort of shift to more indirect control in terms of expressing our values. Now, in other words, more expressing about how things are so important and need to be done. Like it's really important to bench. It's really important to go to shul. It's really important to, you know, Shabbos, to daven properly, to sit at the Shabbos table, whatever the case is. Now, I want to talk about that. I'm going to stop here for a moment as part of the whole being successful and imparting things that we want done or we want instilled or we want sort of developed within children. Okay, and so I want to just talk about how we communicate values, because much of what we do as parents is about values. It's about davening, it's about learning, it's about Shabbos, it's about Derech Eretz, it's about being honest, and so on and so forth. There's actually modern day research on how we want, because values aren't a subject. You can't just lecture, right? And you can't just instruct. So if you want to impart values, you want your child to daven, for example, we'll come back to this soon, but if you want them to learn properly, you want them to have Derech Eretz, you want to be, you know, well-mannered to strangers, you want them to wear a yarmulke all the time, whatever the case is. There's a whole strategy, there's a whole research done on how we communicate values. So first of all, there's discussion. We can't just give instruction. We need to talk about the values. Things that are important to you need to come up in discussion. Not as lectures, but an informal discussion. When you're taking a walk with your son, when you're at a Shabbos table, a story that you heard, a vort that you heard, whatever the case is, need to be around the values that you are important. The second is passion. Passion is really important, right? Talking about values, but children pick up passion. Passion is a language that is deeper than words. And we don't have time to go into the details of the story, but there's a famous story with the Chafetz Chaim about a student in yeshiva in Radin that was going to be thrown out of yeshiva because they caught him breaking Shabbos. And they decided just before they're going to ask the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chafetz Chaim asked for the Bocher to come to him. And the Chafetz Chaim said nothing to the Bocher. He just took his hand, and tears were coming down the Chafetz Chaim's eyes, his face, and just held his hand and he said, Shabbos, Shabbos. And that was it. And the Bocher was never Mechalel Shabbos again. And the story came out much later when this person was already older, living in America, and met someone that was in yeshiva at the time. Right? So we need to show that passion. Kids need to pick up the unspoken language of how important those values are to us. And therefore, what that connects to is the third thing, which is a cliche, but fundamentally important, which is modeling. We need to model. We need to be living examples of the things which are so important to us. And I can't emphasize this enough, and I'm sure you've heard this a million times. But let me give you a couple of examples, right? If we're going to talk about technology, we need to think about how addicted are we to our iPhones. If we want kids to learn and to do well in their Gemara and their Chumash and to learn Torah, we need to reflect how often does the kid see us going to a shir? How serious do we take our davening, right? How excited are we about learning Torah? You know, there's a minhag, people get together at a Shabbos table and in the last, I don't know, 50 years, there's a minhag, a custom that's developed. It's almost part of Shulchan Aruch already, that part of what has to happen at a Shabbos table is that kids need to take out their parsha sheet and go through, or their Dvar Torah that they heard in class in high school, whatever the case is, and say it over. It's part of this thing. Now, I'm not trying to undermine Chas V'Shalom, the parsha sheets or the Dvar Torah that the teachers teach in school. But it's not that critical. What is critical is that the Shabbos table should be one that's filled with spirituality. And if 1 week a child is not interested in Dvar Torah, but he's not that resistant to hearing his father be so excited, or his mother be so excited about Dvar Torah that they heard on a podcast during the week, a nice gematria or a good medrash, whatever the case is, that's perfectly fine. It doesn't need to be structured. On the contrary, the excitement that should come... It's not a checklist. Yiddishkeit is not a checklist. Yiddishkeit is a way of living. Torah is a way of, it's a vibrant thing. It's a passion. And if kids will see that on the parents, that's how you transmit value. So, yes, we have to have a voice of authority. We have to sometimes give instruction. We have to put sometimes a line in the sand. But what's much more effective in terms of gaining control with children is communicating the values that we want them to adhere to in a passionate way, in an exciting way, explaining it, talking about it, giving Dvar Torah about it, and bringing them away around that way. Now, another thing with terms of control, and I'm just going to sort of go quickly here, is we have to have offline negotiation, right? If something is happening that you don't like, don't, this is true with younger children also, but don't start reprimanding on the moment, in the moment. That normally brings to a clash, and normally brings to a back and forth, and normally brings to what they call in the modern literature the dance of anger, where I get angry with you, you get angry with me. There has to be always calm language, assertive language, but more important, sometimes you just need to minimize it as much as you can while it's happening, even if a child is misbehaving at a Shabbos table, even if a child leaves the Shabbos table too early. Don't scream, come back and do this. Leave it and then talk to the child, negotiate offline and negotiate strongly and make it very clear. What are the expectations? Make them clear, but offline, off the situation, so that it's much more effective. Stay focused on the issue. Don't get sidetracked with arguments and clashes because kids are master at doing that, so don't do that. And also, wherever possible, keep the language down, keep the calmness down, and diffuse the conversation. You know, I'll tell you a little thing that I used when I was parenting some of my more lively teenagers, you could say, right? And you know, I have lots of stories to tell. I'm not going to tell them tonight because we don't have time. And when I do tell stories, I only tell the ones that work, by the way. I don't tell you ones that don't work, even though there were plenty of them. But the one that did work was, I had a line that I would use just to diffuse the conversation. I would often have this particular teenager say to me, you know, you can't tell me what to do. So instead of getting all upset and insulted and screaming at her that of course I can because I'm the parent, I'm the boss and I'm in charge, I'll just say, well, actually, as long as you don't pay rent, I actually can. And like that would just sort of like be the end of the discussion. So things like that, just to find your own way, your own jokes, your own humor, just diffuse the situation and but don't back down, just diffuse. This is the thing. Don't be scared, but don't get angry. You see, when a parent explodes and throws a tantrum and clashes, it's actually a sign of insecurity, and the child picks it up. We need to stand our ground, be very firm, even if you're not being listened to. We need to have a voice of authority, use the broken record, just repeat ourselves, but stay calm at all times. Which, of course, goes, all this comes about through the third C. So that's a C of control. The third C one is, of course, communication. We need to build the lines of communication with our children. We need to talk to them a lot, right? We need to really... Okay, I just want to address the question here because it's a good question. So one of the questions is going to a sport game with your son would appreciate kosher in terms of spending time with them. So that's a very, very long discussion, but I will say this just because before I get to communication. Every child is different, and it might just be that for one of you, I mean, I'm not a particularly great I'm a supporter of children doing exercise and playing sport and being healthy. I'm not such a great supporter of them getting immersed in the culture of sport, but for some children it might be the right thing. Every child is different, and it might even be going to a sport game with them, not instead of learning and not instead of davening, but it might be the right thing. So you need to check with someone, or you need to talk to someone who you a mentor of yours, whatever the case is. It might be. But I bring it up now because expectations also vary from child to child. You have to know your child. One of the ways you know your child, again, getting into the third C, is communication. It's really important to get to know your child. And I know that sounds so silly because obviously we know our children. So I would submit to you that some of us don't know our children. Meaning when they turn into teenagers, we actually don't know a lot of their world. They sometimes keep their teenage world hidden from us. And we really need to get to know that world. How we do that is very tricky. We need a lot of talking, and we need a lot of picking up on cues. And more than anything else, we need a lot of listening, right? A lot of listening. And I say listening without judgment. We need to, like, you know, kids will come home and will say, you know, that teacher was just off the wall today. Like, I just got in trouble for doing nothing. So the old-fashioned parenting model, which was good in its time, was, well, you probably didn't do nothing. You probably deserved it. I'm not sure that's a good idea today. I think it's a good idea to now listen and say, that's interesting. I'd like to hear about it. Because pick up, get as much information, build up as much data as you can. We need to do a lot of listening, a lot of asking, a lot of probing. Not always they want to share. Sometimes a child comes on, how was school today? Fine, and not interested in talking. And you pick up on the cue, be clever, and don't push the issue. But look for opportunities that they want to talk and pick up in it and use that opportunity. Use the opportunity to actually listen, ask questions that are direct, that are trying to understand what they're saying. Now, it might be at the end, you actually, you know, you find out that they were wronging, whatever the case was, but pick up on it and try as much as you can to pick up on what they're saying, get an insight into their world, get an insight into what their friends are doing, who their friends are, what they're doing. Without, as soon as you start asking questions with judgment, they will shut down completely. You need to be very careful how you ask those questions. And again, part of communication is always be positive and praise good stuff. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, that you can't be strict. That doesn't mean that there can't be consequences. And before we go to the specific issue, let me just talk about consequences for a moment. The consequences that are most effective with teenagers, number one, try without consequences. Try, when something happens, try express your disappointment. I was really disappointed. You know how important this is. This is a really important thing or important value, whatever the case is, and I'm disappointed. I'm expecting next time better, right? Simple like that. Sometimes at work. Sometimes we need consequences, but the consequences are much better when they natural consequences. In other words, when you just can't do certain things until they achieve certain expectations. Like, you want me to take you to the store to buy it, I'm fine with that, but I want you to do something first, or I want you to give me your iPhone, or whatever the case is, and we'll talk about this in a moment. So let's talk about, because we're running out of time, let's talk about some of the specifics. Let's talk about technology, because I think it's a really important topic. So again, I believe that nowadays, technology is probably the greatest danger to the chinuch, to the education of our teenage children. It is threatening your child's spirituality, their observance, their frumkeit, their general development, their future relationships, and their academic progress. I've seen kids look glazed over, looking like completely zonked because they've obviously been on the computer hours a night before, right? But I'll ask you the following favor. I've said that and I hope you absorb that, but don't go home tonight and start banning stuff because it's not going to work, right? Because it's ineffective, and understand that technology is a real part of every child's life, in our society at least. You're not going to ban technology, right? Technology is there. The internet is a part of our lives, a part of all our lives. Removing phones is not always a good idea. Not giving phones sometimes is not a good idea. It depends on the child. Depends on the family. It depends on how long you can hold out, because sometimes it brings exclusion. You know, kids have WhatsApp chats in their classrooms and in their classes, and they get left out of stuff. They get left out of parties. They get left out of things. They get left out of activities because they don't know, because they don't have how to communicate, right? So I'm not suggesting a ban type of mentality. What I am suggesting is this. Number one, and please listen to this. This is so crucial. And I think this is the beginning of a really important conversation. And some of you are doing this already, but it's so crucial. And please don't think you're immune, because you're not. Please don't think that your standards have a bit different to other standards, and you're not Meir Sha'arim Frum. That's fine. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that your child can sit up for 6 hours at night, even according to your standards, whatever your standards are, and watch really inappropriate stuff, or be completely addicted to a game that they are on a forum together with their friends till who knows what time of the night. And this is really happening. It's happening to many of your children, right? So you need to know what's happening. You cannot let your child go to bed with an unfiltered phone and expect them not to do things that they shouldn't do when they go to sleep. You just cannot expect that. It's unrealistic. It's in fact not even fair to them, because they have a temptation, and therefore it's very difficult, right? And please don't think to yourself that, you know, my kid doesn't do that, I'm fine. It's not true. I'm telling you it's not true, right? Kids are kids, and they're normal. So what I do think you should do, here's some of the steps. Number one, you need to start a conversation. Every single one of the parents need to start a conversation with their children. And the conversation goes something like this. It needs to be an assertive conversation, and it needs to be a warm conversation at the same time. Right, not screaming, not rules. You know, I've heard that's terrible, and you're too much on your phone. Boom! From now on, I'm taking it away. No, need to start a normal, mature conversation. Things like, I want you to know I love you unconditionally, but I also want you to know that as your father, as your mother, I am responsible, or we are responsible, for your well-being. Physical well-being, emotional well-being, academic well-being, ruchnistic well-being, spiritual well-being, right? Now, I know you don't always like it, but you have to understand that I always mean you good, right? You need to acknowledge to your child that temptation is normal. When you grow up, especially in your teenage years, temptation is normal to explore the world, to explore things that you shouldn't explore. But I, as your parent, need to be guiding you. That's my job. I know you don't like it. I know your friends, you think your friends don't have those kind of parents. But I'm just telling you, it's your, you'll thank me one day. Those kind of things, but nicely, not condescending, right? And also, you need to tell your child, I want you to be part of this conversation. I look at you as a mature child. You're a teenager, you have temptations, it's difficult for you, I get that. But I want you to be part of the conversation. I don't want to just come down hard on you, impose rules and impose restrictions. I want you to talk to me, right? We need to do this together, but we do need to make changes. And ask your son, what do you think? What kind of changes he can make? You never know. He might come up with stricter changes than you think even, if he sees you serious, right? Right? Because what you need to say to him is very, very simple, right? We cannot continue the way we are continuing because it's bad for you. And I'm failing as a parent if I let you do that, right? It's not because I don't like you. It's because I have a responsibility which Hashem gave me, and I need to make sure that it's been done right. So let's talk about this. But we are going to make changes. That's not negotiable, right? So the changes, number one, is you need to assure them that you're not interested in intruding on their private life. But on the other hand, technology is something in teenage years and high school years that they cannot do without their parents being able to access it, right? So there needs to be things like, I'm going to trust you, right? And you're going to trust me. So you're going to trust me, for example, that I'm not going to go on your computer every day and check your email. But I'm going to trust you that you're going to do what I'm telling you to do, and we're going to do it together. So first of all, by the way, there's many people who know these things, and I'm sure there's people around the school community that know. There's a lot of good filters out there. There's a lot of programs for families where you can get recorded about what kids are doing and what they're on and so on and so forth. But I will tell you this. Phones need to be filtered, right? And you need to, but don't do it behind your kid's back. It needs to be done with your child. Phones need to be filtered, or phones need to be given in to the parents before they go to sleep. And you need to make sure they don't have a second phone. Certainly not one that you've given them, right? As a backup system. But you need to make sure they have one phone, and the phone either you have, or it's got a really good filter on that they cannot access the internet when they go to sleep. Laptops need to be in public places when all possible. Kids, when they work on laptops, they're more than welcome to do school, but I'm not a big supporter of them working in their room privately. They need to be in a public place. Now, it needs to be a relationship of trust that you build up. I'm not going to go and look every time I walk by, but I will tell you that if I walk by every time you cover the screen or you change something, I'm going to be suspicious. So therefore, once in a while, I will check. Once in a while, I need to have your passwords. Once in a while, I will check just to make sure I've got the right passwords. Right? There's nothing wrong with that as long as you build a relationship with them that, in other words, don't do this behind their back. They need to know that you can look over their shoulder. But something really needs to change. There needs to be boundaries. Cannot take it away. You cannot take away complete access. Depending on your standards and your value, you might want to give them some time to watch certain things. You might want to give them some time to have fun, to play games, depending on how their level of addiction is happening. By the way, if the level of addiction gets out of control, you need to consult professional help. It could be a real, real problem, right? But have it in a positive context, but a firm one. It's not negotiable, but let's do this together. Because if we don't do it together, then they need to understand. You take it away and they won't get it back. When they do breach the trust, that's when the consequence fits in. So they do breach the trust. They overrode your password, or they hacked your filter system. You need to take the phone away, but not for, you know, I'm going to take away now for 3 months. It doesn't work. Don't build up resentment. Listen, you know, it's a mistake. I'm not angry with you. You do make mistakes, but it's important for me, again, as a parent, to help you learn. So I'm going to take the phone for 2 days. You're not going to have a phone. I'll give it to you back at the end of 2 days. If it happens again, it's going to be longer, or 1 day to start with, whatever the case is. I would also suggest that you start a coalition with other parents so that kids don't come and tell you what all the parents are doing and what other kids are doing. Every year level, get a group of parents who are concerned about these things and make up your so that you do it together. The power of a group is very powerful, so the kids get the sense that this has been taken seriously, and it's not just them, a sugar and a parent, but actually all parents are doing this now, right? It's really, really important. But I cannot emphasize enough how urgent this is, because we are in a very, very urgent zone. And the problem is that all the other specific areas of parenting, like davening and learning, that are perhaps becoming weaker, are all to do with technology. If we manage the technology properly, all the other things will become a lot easier. I promise you, because they want to do the right thing. They want to be involved in good things, right? But they can't do it because their minds are so filled with all the stuff that it's really, really problematic. You need to reflect on your own usage and communicate that to the children. I told a parent recently, you make sure you have a meal with your kids every single day, and you don't go on the phone and tell your kids that you're doing that. It's a conscious thing. Let your kids see that you're also sacrificing. Kids need to understand that the parents also need to sacrifice. Check up, pick up on cues, and most importantly, keep your ears and eyes open. Don't hide and go into denial. Even if you put in the system, systems break down. Even if you put in rules, rules break down. Things break down. You need to be very attuned. You need to ask questions. You need to have your antennas up. You need to notice what's going on. You need to notice if there's a slip and pick up on it and find out what's going on and deal with it. There's much more to talk about, but these are some of the principles. I want to just talk about, and we're running out of time, but I want to just quickly talk about davening a little bit. Davening is a very, very difficult thing for adults, so I'm sure it's difficult for children, right? So again, davening is not a subject. So I touched on this before, but let me just go through some of the concepts. It's very hard to get kids really involved and excited about davening. But I will tell you this, and I don't mean any. Don't take this the wrong way. Put it this way, right? Because some of the other rabbanim know what I'm talking about when I say this. That davening with the minyan, for example, Sydney is the most beautiful place, and I love living here. But davening with the minyan is not Sydney's strong point. It's becoming better after the corona because people are really excited to go back to shul. But it's not, we really need to fix that up, because I have noticed that when in communities where there's a strong culture of davening with the minyan, and there's a strong culture of serious davening, where you have shuls, there's no talking in the middle of davening and it's taken seriously, it somehow automatically filters down to the community in general and to the kids. So when that's not there, it's very, very difficult. But you can't change the world. I'm just bringing that up because that's something to work on. But again, davening is something, it's a value. You can't just instruct your child to daven, right? First of all, if they're not davening properly, don't create pressure, right? Create certain negotiated boundaries. You come to shul. I really want to see you in shul for mincha. Now, I do think, by the way, it's important for parents to get their children to daven with them in the same shul. But you could negotiate something, like it's not negotiable. You are going to come to mincha on Shabbos with me in the same shul, but you don't have to sit next to me. If you can daven properly, I'm happy for you to sit somewhere else. Right? That kind of thing, right? So negotiate the boundaries. But don't look to see how well he's davening and how many words he said, and if he did all the sections of davening. That's not that important. Just negotiate the general principle. However, that is only effective, as I said before, when there's stuff coming around it. If you're able to learn with your child, and by the way, not all parents can learn with their child. If you can't learn with your child formally, don't learn with him. It's not a mitzvah. It is a mitzvah, but you can delegate the mitzvah to someone else, right? If you learn well with your child, then learn something with your child about davening. Learn about what the Gemara says about davening. Learn about what Shulchan Aruch says about davening. Learn about what the Mefarshim say about davening. Tell stories about davening. Tell stories of people who you notice daven really, really well, and so on and so forth, right? Don't overdo expectations. Have reasonable expectations. Don't make them crazy. And I know parents that make that you know, the younger teenagers, they get them in shul and they're able to control them. Little do they know the stuff their kid is. The kids are not in that world. The kid is doing it out of compliance, but he's resenting it. And it's the same child, by the way, that he's on technology and he's doing all kinds of things, which I found out different ways that the child is doing it. It doesn't work. You need to build a relationship. It needs to be in the context of that relationship. It needs to be warm. Negotiated rules, boundaries, yes. But don't over-manage and don't micromanage and don't create that pressure. It needs to be all in a warm way, in a context way, and it needs to be surrounded by passion, by excitement, by modeling your own davening, by taking your child to a shul where they don't talk and davening is taken seriously. And also, another very, very important part of davening is to acknowledge to children that davening is difficult. The Zohar says, Shas Loisa Shas Krova, the time of davening is a time of struggle. You need to acknowledge that to your children. You say, I know it's difficult for you. I find it difficult too. When I was your age, I found it very difficult. It is monotonous. It's hard. You say the same things. But eventually, you get appreciation for that. And you know that if you daven and you don't have such kavana, it's still a beautiful davening. If you only manage to say, you know, if you missed out some of the words by mistake, or you didn't know what you were talking about, or your mind wandered, it's fine. Hashem loves you davening anyway. And you know, that kind of thing. All of this, by the way, again, we're running out of time now, so I'm going to wrap up. But all of this comes a lot with instilling pride. Also pointing out, I think part of the problem today also happens a lot of times, kids don't understand the difference that they make. They don't understand the value of one mitzvah. They don't understand the value of their Shemira Shabbos, the value of their Torah learning, the value of their davening. And that's something to, when you're talking about it and getting excited about it, one of the things to share with kids is that you need to understand that when you daven, even if it's an incomplete davening, what it means to the Eibishter, what it means to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unbelievable. He's listening to you. It's a conversation. He's focusing on you and you alone. Right? You matter. You make a difference. That kind of thing. You're learning. One time you push yourself, learn a bit extra. It's infinite. Right? The Svarim talk about that. It's written in Tanya, written in other Svarim, in Musa Svarim. It's every time you push yourself, you learn a bit more. It's unbelievable. Also, very important to, when you're talking about learning or davening, to emphasize the children, the effort part of it. It's not about completion. Don't make your kids crazy to come first in the test or to get hundreds in the Gemara test. It's not that important. What is important is that they should work hard, that they should put in the effort. Because that's what the Eibishter wants. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to serve Him. He wants us to work hard to serve Him, not to be the best and not to achieve high things. And that's not what it's about. It's about being an Eved Hashem. It's about being excited about Yiddishkeit. Instilling pride, by the way, also has to do with another topic which we'll have to leave for a different time, which is about social pressure. Social pressure is this whole concept that kids are insecure today. Kids are not proud about the Yiddishkeit. They're not proud about what it means to be Jewish, bechlal. And that's something we have to talk to children about and learn about ourselves and talk about the Shabbos table and create that atmosphere and that warmth. Again, all in the context of that conversation and relationship. So we're out of time, so I'm going to just end off with two very brief points. First of all, let me just say that I'm more than happy, and I don't mind giving out my email or my number. Anyone can ask Rabbi Chaitin, or in fact, you can. I can tell you now, it's rabbi.g@bina.com.au. I don't know who's on the chat. So if you want to ask me questions or follow up, I'm more than happy, and I'm more than happy if there's a number of questions to either do a recording or to do another session or whatever the case is. But I want to just end with two very, very important things, and that is the following. First of all, going back to what I said in the beginning, we can do it. Hashem gives us the power. Sometimes it seems overwhelming, but we can do it. Because every time we think about it, just start. Start the conversation, make one thing, start, take one step, spend a bit more time with your child. And tonight or tomorrow, take the first step towards mopping up and cleaning up the whole technology urgent issue that is really a problem. And make a plan of what you're going to do about it over the next few weeks, what the conversation you're going to have with your children. Take step by step, but make it happen. It's really, really urgent. But I want to also say to you that one of the difficulties of parenting teenagers is that we don't often see immediate feedback. Right? We don't see, sometimes we see children resist it, children don't seem to be really appreciating it. We kind of feel like, what am I working so hard for? But we know what the Gemara tells us. The Gemara tells us, yagaita umatsasa taimin. When you put in the effort, you will succeed. If a person says, I put in the effort and I succeeded, you believe him, because effort brings success. Right? Effort brings a lot of success. And the success is later on. Later on, the kids who resisted you and you managed it properly and you kept up the relationship with them, they will come and they will really thank you, and they will show and express how they've absorbed those values that you taught them, as long as you did it in the context of that relationship and that strong relationship. You might think you're not succeeding, not making headway, but you are if it's done in that positive way. Finally, and I always say, to talk about parenting, the most important thing with parenting is to daven. And I mean that very seriously. It's not just a nice way to end the drasha. I mean that actually as a practical step. We need to believe in davening, as we tell our children to. And we need to believe, when women ben shlich, they need to really daven for the chinuch of their children. When men say tilim, they need to really have in mind the chinuch of their children. Set aside time to specifically daven that Hashem should give us hatzlacha in this difficult time. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to our tefillahs. And the Eibishter will listen to all our tefillahs in Mirza Hashem. And He will grant us a lot of nachas from our children. Don't worry about setbacks. We all have them. It'll be a couple of steps forward. We have our setbacks. We can always repair and rebuild. If we lose it with a child, we can always apologize to the child. And that's okay. Without condoning the behavior, we can say, look, I was really upset. I shouldn't have spoken to you that way. But let's talk about it. And step by step, we can build that relationship. We can be parents. We don't have to be scared to be parents. And we can instill those values step by step, according to the child. Step by step, allowing children to taste success, because success breeds success. And hopefully, Mirtz Hashem, have a lot of nachas from all our children. and only simcha and bracha. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that was somewhat useful. There's a lot more to talk about, but maybe we'll have to leave it for other times. Oh, I see some. Give me 1 second. I see there's not questions. Okay, so I guess we'll leave it for now. But again, if you do have questions, rabbi@bina.com.au, I'm more than happy if you email me. And